Hello, testing.
Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing.
Testing, testing. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is Gonzo, stand-up comedian, the Greg Wilson.
Thank you very much.
You and me, you may have seen Greg on Mindy Project. Mm-hmm. You were on that, fresh off the boat, The Odd Couple, Ugly Betty. World's Dumbest.
Yeah, that's like World's Dumbest Criminals, World's Dumbest Thrill Seekers, you know, shows like that. That's what that is.
People who are not smart enough to live, like a Darwin Awards.
Yeah, kind of. You know, it was a big show on...
True TV.
Yeah, True TV. I was going to say TBS, but it wasn't TBS. You know, the thing is, it started out as the Smoking Guns, World's Dumbest Criminals.
That's too long.
That's how it started. Right. Then it got cut down to World's Dumbest Criminals, and then they were like, well, we got to expand beyond criminals because they were running out of clips. And so then it became, you know, Thrill Seekers or Entertainer, World's Dumbest Entertainers. And it was all fail videos, and, you know, that's where that kind of, you know, clip show started out, and it had a bunch of us comedians. But they also had some of the lowest grade celebrities. We're talking like Tanya Harding. And listen, I like to rub shoulders with the best.
Tanya Harding.
I know. I knew I'd made it in Hollywood.
Did you try to pick her up?
So, no.
I think some of those people, you meet them, you just have to try.
Yeah, I know, but she's a little heavier now, and I don't have the upper body strength that I once did.
Okay.
So, I did not try to pick her up.
You were introduced as a celebutard?
A celebutard, that's right. That's right.
That show. Yeah. And so, I haven't seen it. You weren't the host. There's like a panel.
There's a panel of us, yeah. There's a bunch of different comedians and the quote-unquote celebrities.
Celebutards.
You know, yeah, that would get in on it. So, that's what it was, and it was a lot of fun.
And you make fun of the people who were on the show.
We make fun of the videos. Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, the thing is, though, this show, first of all, it's a terrible credit to have because the name of the show is World's Dumbest ...
Yeah, okay. You're on it, so that...
So, right, and so they go, you may have seen him on World's Dumbest. They assume you're the World's Dumbest that they're talking about. He's one of the stars of World's Dumbest. Here he is. Like, yeah, World's Dumbest, me! So it wasn't a great credit to be introduced by.
It's not on brand for you.
Not on brand for me. It was very much my brand. It just, as a title spoken before your name, not great.
All right. You know what I'm going to do right now? Yeah. I'm going to finish introducing the show.
Okay, go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, no, we should do that. But that's okay. This is the way this thing goes.
This is how, unfortunately, I interrupt everything all the time. I consider it banter, but apparently it's me interrupting. Sorry,
go ahead. We're going to be okay with that. You're going to hear more about Greg in a moment. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is celebutard and stand-up comedian, the Greg Wilson. Now, my first question is this. We had our mutual friend, Samantha Grody,
mm-hmm.
on this show.
Mm-hmm.
She recommended you.
Mm-hmm.
She introduced you as the Greg Wilson,
mm-hmm.
and then said that she always tells you you should not do that because it sounds stupid and that you should just use Greg Wilson. But there's got to be like 1,000 Greg Wilsons.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That was the whole point the whole time.
Yeah.
People take it the wrong... And here's the other thing. First of all, let's deal with that. It really was just because there's so many other Greg Wilsons, and I started, and this is, it was something that happened at the very beginning of the internet, where people really didn't understand search engines weren't apt to buy nothing, and so I felt like I just needed to be different from them, and I felt if I was the Greg Wilson, then at least if they searched the Greg Wilson, they would find this Greg Wilson.
Well, and then it's easy to remember the Greg Wilson.
Right, it had a little, exactly, and also at the time, this is when people started getting big on branding yourself. You got to brand yourself. So then I thought, okay, well, this is branding myself. I created a brand. But at the same time, it also created a lot of friction because we were like, oh, really? The Greg? It's like, can we just... Okay.
So it's those people that say you're too good for us now, like in those British things where the people leave their class and they want to move up in classes and everyone wants
it's
to
It's almost
them
one
down.
Of those, who do you think you are, Mr.
Well, that's
the
exactly
Greg Wilson.
Right. That's, exactly,
that's what it is.
That's
and
it is.
It's like, okay, let's take a step back for a minute. If I were a magician...
Right. The Amazing Kreskin.
Thank you. Example. Would anyone give a shit? Okay, if I were a rapper.
What do we got?
The everything. Yeah. Okay?
Right.
The, you know, Eminem is not a name of a person. Okay? So, but for some reason, you know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, it's if you were anything, so in other parts of entertainment, totally fine. Right. But because I was the only one to do it in comedy, I'm a jackass.
I'm here to tell you that time has made you a star because you're not the only person that does that.
Right? Well, that's the thing. Everyone kind of caught up with it. Once I put it out there on TV, everyone else started doing it, especially with Twitter handles and all that. Everything's the this, the that. And I was like, well, now you're fucking welcome. Oh, I'm sorry about the language.
That's the podcast. See, I don't have to do that because my name is Denzel Myers.
Right.
I only have to be alert that my friends introduce me to other people as Denzel Washington.
Right, because it's a natural thing.
Because they just
it just
there.
Flows right yeah. out that way after Denzel.
So it's not the Denzel part, it's the last name.
Yeah.
But no, you did the right thing.
Thank you.
And if anybody gives you a hard time about it in the future, you could tell them either to fuck off, or you could just tell them to call me.
I'll say, you need to listen to the Comedy Death Star podcast.
Well, they could
but
just
yes,
call me
but that's what it was. It was just about separating myself from all the other Greg Wilsons, which it's an abundantly common name, and so that's all it was, and I've never, and so in many ways I've built, it has kind of taken on a life of its own to where people do know the Greg Wilson, and I've heard from other Greg Wilsons, this magician who was like, oh, you're the Greg Wilson, I hate you, because when people, now, because he's like, well, now when I say I'm Greg Wilson, people go, the Greg Wilson? And so it actually has come full circle.
Well, that's right. Now when anybody looks for any Greg Wilson, pimp, murderer, accountant, butcher, plumber, or whatever, the magician, they come to you.
Yes,
first.
The Greg Wilson comes.
And then they have to find the other guy. So you did exactly the right kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't want you to... Now, what was my other question about that? Oh, that's it. No, I already made the joke. Forget it. Where are you from?
I was actually born here in California, in San Jose, California.
You did not grow up in San Jose.
I did not grow up in San Jose. That's where I was born.
Okay.
My family bounced around for a couple of years around the Bay Area, Redwood City, Sunnyvale, you know, just various little towns around. Yeah. Those are the ones I remember. We bounced around quite a bit before my family moved to the Dallas area. And so I lived around, in and around the Dallas area for 20 some odd years. I think I moved there in about, before the fourth, there was the fourth grade, and then I lived there till I was 30. So Dallas is really my hometown. I'm a huge Dallas Cowboys fan.
Okay.
You know, as much as I, because then I lived in New York for a long time, and I went to Yankees games, and I really learned to love the Yankees. But I found in the playoffs that, in fact, I am, whether I want to be or not, a Texas Rangers fan.
Sometimes those things are hard to break.
They are. I can't help it. I find myself rooting for them.
No, sorry.
Even though I hate them, but damn it, I can't. You can't help with your hometown, and I feel connected to Dallas.
The Yankees are to baseball what the Cowboys are to football.
Absolutely.
Which is
absolutely.
This great team with a long history, and people love to hate them. Just because they're the Cowboys
and they're
the Yankees.
Anything bad happens to Cowboys, I get so many messages from people on Facebook and Twitter and everything else.
They're like,
Cowboys. Yeah, did you see that? I mean, I knew, I think I got a tweet about Tony Romo getting injured in the game before I actually saw it happen. Like, it aired a moment earlier in New York, and I was already getting messages. Right. And then I see the play. I'm like, what happened? Oh, my God.
Right, the satellite delay.
Yeah, satellite delay. That, yeah, they somehow got it. So
that's funny. Well, I only ask because you're kind of loud and obnoxious like somebody from the East Coast.
Well, I'll tell you.
People probably imagine and guess that you're...
That I'm from New York.
From Philly or New York.
That's number one. And I'll tell you what happened. In the Dallas area, and one of the where I went to high school is in Plano most of the time. My senior year is in El Paso, but there's 1 year in El Paso, then back to Dallas. When I was in Plano, the two companies from New York, JCPenney and Frito-Lay, was it Frito-Lay?
They
both shut down their New York headquarters and moved them to Plano.
Yes.
So suddenly our town, our southern town, was filled with New Yorkers.
Oh, they were going to say junk food, but New Yorkers, yeah, okay.
But that too, but what was filled with New Yorkers, transplanted New Yorkers. They had all these teenagers that they brought with them, particularly teenage Jews. And I was already very close. My best friend was Jeremy Schwartz, whose parents were New York Jews, who'd moved to play, you know, out of New York and come to Texas. So that was already my best friend. And then these other kids showed up, and then these became my best friends. Yeah. And so I became basically a New York Jewish person, you know, even though, you know, I'm not. But that's essentially
you're
what...
You're not from New York and you're not Jewish.
Yeah, I'm Mexican. You're Mexican. From California, grew up in Dallas.
All right, all right. And you've always been like this, this gonzo thing. You're too
always,
loud. You're
always
outside the lines.
Oh, God.
There. You've always been like
this. Let me tell you a little story.
No, because I can tell that you're the kid in third, fourth
without question,
grade whose mom brings an extra shirt to Christmas because he's going to sweat through it before dinner.
Right.
No, no, you're that kid. You're definitely that kid.
Totally, without question.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I
you're
was...
Your poor mom.
I was absolutely... I in the second grade, this demonstrates, this tells you everything you need to know.
Okay.
In the second grade, because here's the thing, I'll give away the big secret now.
Spoiler alert.
I'm third of seven children.
Okay.
So when you're third of seven, it wasn't always seven, but by the we got to seven, yeah, and so no, I was always third, struggling yeah. for attention. So anyways.
You can't be third if it was always seven.
Right, exactly. I had to be third yeah. at one point, and then, yeah. you know. So second grade. We do a class production yeah. of Hansel and Gretel.
Okay.
I, of course, auditioned for Hansel and give what I consider a stellar audition. Head and shoulders above all the other right. children. I gave him dimension.
Yeah.
He was
Color.
Lost. He was
Color.
A child lost.
Yeah. Imagine that. Lost
yes.
in the woods.
So filled with
no
terror.
No cell phone.
Oh, my God.
No GPS.
I listened.
Yeah.
I was so present.
I understand.
So, they don't give me the role. They give the blonde kid, I think his name was Jason, or Chad, or whatever, some piece of shit white boy name.
Chad.
They give, like mine's a different, Greg Wilson, like mine isn't a piece of shit white boy name. But anyways, that's the other dilemma. But they give the blonde kid the role of Hansel, and now I'm like, I'm, you know, second grade, I'm screaming typecasting, yeah. you know. This is bullshit. I read circles around him. How could you, you know, I was given Gingerbread Man number one.
Number one?
Number one. There were like five of us.
Yeah.
I was Gingerbread Man number one, and now, in Hansel and Gretel, we're just there... We're basically set pieces until the end when they break the spell yeah. and then all the gingerbread children are released. We had one line. Yay, we're free. That was it.
It wasn't free at last, free at last. Sweet God. Yeah.
That would have been the cross-cultural casting I had been looking for, but they didn't give it to
us. They didn't do that.
Yay, we're free. That's the line. Yay, we're free. I turned yay, we're free. into a five-minute Greg Wilson showcase extravaganza.
Just
as I ran around and liberated not just the gingerbread men on the stage, but the gingerbread children in the audience.
Everywhere.
Everyone got Everywhere. Liberated. I went crazy. You're free! We're free! Come on, guys, we're free! I'm starting dances. I'm doing the whole thing. I'm going crazy. Everyone's cheering and everything. And that's how they end the show.
And you were supposed to just say the line.
All we were supposed to do is, yay, and we're free. And
you
then
went off.
That was it. I went off, yeah. created a whole scene for myself. Yeah. Multiple. I used every part of the stage and the audience. Let me tell you something.
You're still doing this act.
I can't stop.
This is your.
This was it.
This
I exploded. Never stopped. After we did one for our, we performed for the rest of the second grade. That was right. supposed to be one performance for the rest of second grade. By the end of the day, we had performances scheduled for every other grade in the school. We got.
People wanted this.
People
wanted
it. They couldn't believe this incredible ending. You got to see this kid go crazy. Five extra performances. Command performances.
And you didn't get paid anything extra, did you?
Didn't get a dime.
No. See, there you
I
go.
Know.
That's fucking
child
second,
labor.
Second grade for you.
Child labor.
Yeah.
But that tells you everything you know right there.
So when this happened, was that a big discovery? You said second grade? No, you were probably always like this. How did they keep you still the whole rest of the play? That was the miracle.
Well, that was the miracle. That was, and I have a feeling I wasn't still. I imagine I was probably trying to steal yeah. the scene, even being still.
Yeah.
You know, I would have, I imagine I probably struck a pose that I thought would at least get attention.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then, but when you finally could move and speak, you just...
It was explosive, yeah. Is the only way to describe it. The only way to describe it.
It's funny, because every time you say explosive, I really get like a sense of diarrhea. You
know, yeah. Diarrhea is accurate,
it's
my man.
Uncontrolled. Yeah. It's messy.
You've seen my act.
And there's nothing you can do about
it.
Yeah. No, I like that in your work, what I've seen, you seem to enjoy having people be a little uncomfortable.
Oh, I love it.
You make it fun for them.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't feel bad, but you really pushing the envelope there and fucking with people and playing with them.
Unfortunately, my motto is, and this is not a good motto, and I don't encourage anyone else to live by this motto.
Well, now you've branded it, you've claimed it, nobody's going to be able to, but go ahead.
But the motto is, you don't know where the line is until you cross it.
That's a great motto. I say that to somebody at least once a week.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
I absolutely agree with that because that's why I also enjoy it. I enjoy it because I'm constantly amazed at how far I can go. And that's what I mean when I say gonzo comedy, because I'm going to get out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and do something fun and wild and different.
Yeah.
You know, I did a show in Salt Lake City where I don't know if I should be proud of this or not. It wasn't even a great show, but the show wasn't going well. So I was like, I need something to happen. So I started having the waitresses come up and spit liquor into my mouth, like fountain shoot liquor into my mouth. And it kept missing and hitting me in the face and shit. It was burning my eyes. It worked for me. I was like, this is incredible. I don't know if the audience enjoyed it, but I enjoyed it. But it was
they responded.
Yes, they absolutely responded. Because I wanted to do something weird and wild just to get the show going.
Yeah,
you know?
But I think what this is an actual principle that, to me, is what innovation is about. If you want to work in the comfort zone,
yeah.
If you want to play in the safe space, that's okay. And a lot of life is oriented around success. And to do that, you make sure you work within the zone that is known.
Right, right.
But if you really want to innovate, you have to find where the edge is. And the only way to find where the edge is to fall off and go too far. That's the only way.
Yeah.
Because if you come close to the edge, it's only the edge that you think is there. You gotta go
too
far.
No, you're exactly right about that.
You gotta go too far.
You really don't, and that's the thing. You'll be amazed at how far you can go before you get too far. It'll be so much further than you ever thought too far actually was.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is you can't, and so you can't even think about it. You gotta just keep going. Yeah. And then when you find the line, you're like, okay, let's pull it back from there.
Yeah.
You know? I love playing with fire. I love dancing on that line. I love making people nervous. I have jokes. That's why I do jokes about like school shootings and the N-word and things like this, because I love it when the audience thinks, how's he going to get himself out of this?
Yes.
I love that moment when the audience is like, oh God, please don't. Please, how's he going to get, this is not going to end well. This is not going to end well. And to me, that's like a great movie. I mean, great movies have that point of no return.
Yeah.
How are they going to get out of this?
Yeah.
But in comedy, I mean, you don't have to just get out of it. You have to find a way to make it funny. You know what I mean? So they see you going and they're like, oh my God, he's never going to make it. And then you come out of it like, the release is a greater experience, more cathartic than if I'd never gone there.
Well, and along the way, you do the basic job, which is to keep people watching, right? Nobody turns your thing off. Nobody says, oh, Greg is up. The Greg is up. I'm going to go take a piss now.
Oh, that's for sure.
I mean, that's not what's happening.
That's not what's happening. In fact, it's usually when people come back in the room. Is when people I'm not saying that it'd be braggadocio. I'm saying that because people tell me that all the time. I see it happen.
Well,
I go on stage and I see everybody kind of wander back in because they're not sure what I'm going to do.
Is this guy going to light himself on fire?
Right. He's at least going to make up some characters and start imitating people that he sees in the audience. I mean, I'm at least usually going to do some of that. I had this fun little riff with these two ladies in the audience. They were sisters, but they're 8 years apart. And so I quickly just started acting out what I thought it must have been like when the one was in high school and the other one was 8 years old, wanting to go with her, and she wants to go out and explore boys and all this. And so I just started just creating this whole scene right there on stage. And, you know, I mean, that lives and dies right there in the moment, you know.
But those women loved it and everybody...
Oh, everybody went crazy.
Yeah. All right, now before we go any further, give your social media links so that people can know where to find you, because you got them at the edge of their seat now. There's no reason why they should be on the edge of their seat for the rest of their lives.
There you go. At the Greg Wilson on Twitter. And then on Instagram and on Facebook, it's / the Greg Wilson one. It's the Greg Wilson one. Because that's the other thing about being the Greg Wilson. If I don't rush to get it now with whatever comes out next, someone grabs it right in front of me. Right. And it's always some rando Greg Wilson in the middle of America that's clearly been asked, oh, the Greg Wilson? And so he thought, man, next thing that comes out, I'm getting the Greg Wilson. So every time, if I don't get it right away, I have to add the one.
So wait, it's one on Instagram and...
And Facebook.
And Facebook. The yeah. Greg Wilson yeah. one.
One.
Number one.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to do that. All right. Here's some other questions. I was watching earlier today much more than I planned of the 2008 film that you were in.
The Hottie and the Naughty. Yeah.
I was reading you got some critical acclaim for your sensitive portrayal of the dude's best friend in that, right? The movie was...
Where did you read that?
Nominated for the Oscar...
Lowest grossing movie of all time. Or I guess opening weekend, lowest grossing opening weekend of all time.
Really?
Yeah, it was in the thousands of dollars.
For a major studio picture?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a major studio picture, but it was considered a nationwide release.
Okay, nationwide release.
And lowest grossing, I think it grossed something in the neighborhood of like $1,800. And that is not even a joke. I'm not even like lowering that number. Like, it wasn't $18,000. Let me tell you a little story here.
Where is the decimal point in
this number? Yeah, no, it's $1,800, I believe. Yeah. We go
opening weekend.
I go back to Dallas, to go see it with my friends. Opening weekend, we go to the movie theater. It's at the big Cinemaplex. We go. We have some dinner, drinks first. We go to the 8:30 whatever show, the main show.
And you went back there just to be home to see it with
your
friends.
Yes, to go to the guys. I'm in a movie.
This is your fucking moment.
I did it. Okay, your buddy made it.
Well, and who's in the movie?
Paris Hilton.
There you go.
Yes.
So, I mean, yeah.
Who at the time, boom. Huge star.
Yeah.
At the time.
Slam dunk.
Totally.
Yeah.
So, we go up to the line to buy the ticket. My buddy's first line goes, oh my God, it's sold out. I'm like, really? And he goes, no. And we buy the tickets. We go in. We're the only people in the theater.
Like four or five.
Me and my friends.
Yeah.
And I think there was one couple up at the front. That was it.
Making out. They weren't even there.
They were there to finger bang. They couldn't care less about the movie. They thought they would be all alone in that theater to finger bang. And here we are, these nine, seven dudes, two chicks making noise. So we start smoking weed in the theater.
Yeah.
Because we're like, fuck it. Nobody's coming. And I'm all depressed now.
Yeah.
Because I realized my ship came in and promptly sank. Okay. Right. It sank in port.
Right.
It never got out to sea.
Yeah, they built it. They built it on the bottom.
It was
unclear on the.
So we just started smoking pot, and I was just so depressed. I was like, "Oh my God, this is a disaster." We were the only ones there to see it, so it was over before it started.
It didn't fly. Now, here's my serious question about that for you as an actor. Mm-hmm. You play the main character, the main guy. You play his best friend.
Sure.
And there's a long tradition of being the best friend.
Yes.
And there's a certain task to that. What do you have to do to that guy? What is that job as the best friend for the guy in that movie?
Well, I mean, that all comes down to the writing. I mean, this one was written in the John Belushi style type, animal, idiot, kind of character that I'm built for.
Right.
I'm naturally built for that kind of thing. I've got the belly and the round face and, the dark hair. And so it's always, so I'm kind of built to play that, which is very common with the best friend character. Yeah. It's usually a chubby, even if you look at that Along Came Polly, I mean, here you have Philip Seymour Hoffman playing this fat, sloppy, idiot character. Yeah. Who runs in the room is like, oh, I sharted. You know what I mean? That Philip Seymour Hoffman, one of our,
but in his last moments, he sharted himself.
Boy,
too,
so oh my really goodness! Well, okay. That was all Denzel. That was all Denzel. Yeah. But so it was just about being who I kind of am. This loud, ridiculous. I mean, it was the easiest thing to audition for in the world. It was written for my type. I'm that type. It was hand in glove.
But I agree with you. You are. That is a great kind of role for you, right? The best friend is the guy that
right.
He keeps picking him up when his friend is down.
Right, with something funny, with kind of sage advice.
He's got some sage advice, right? The protagonist is usually kind of depressed. He's, you know,
right, exactly. And he's got to be kind of propped up. And
yeah. So you're constantly saying, come on, man, let's go to the party. Let's go after the girl. Let's do the thing. That's a great role for you.
Yeah, and it's something I was very well built for, and you know, I've obviously, you know, I'm happy to do it again. I'm not ever going to be like, no, I've done that. Naughty. No, I'll always do it again.
So it's kind of loud, enthusiastic, pushy, which is why I think you've also been cast as the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny.
This is true,
right? You must have been a pretty obnoxious Easter Bunny.
I was going to say, when was I the Easter Bunny? I was definitely the Tooth Fairy and Con Man.
It's in your credits, so.
Which one's the Easter Bunny?
See, I actually read things about you.
I appreciate that. Not all of it is written by me, though. I played a clown.
Friendly?
Scary? Yeah. Well, kind of thuggish. He was New York thuggish clown.
That's a scary clown.
On Bones. On Dangerous. Bones, I played the clown. Trying to think if I ever, where would I have played an Easter Bunny? It escapes me. But I have done a lot of things, a lot of smaller projects, so it may be in the mix somewhere, and all I just don't recall off the top of my head.
All right. And so the Tooth Fairy, were you just like this?
No. Tooth Fairy was completely the opposite of this.
Really?
The Tooth Fairy, here's what happened. Alan Tudyk, are you familiar with Alan Tudyk?
No, but I like his name because he's got toot in it.
Yeah, right, Tudyk. And he's been taking that ever since high school, I'm sure. Alan, he was, you know, he was in Firefly. And he was the robot in iRobot. And now he's the robot in Star Wars Rogue One. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is a series, because Firefly has such a huge sci-fi cult following. It was the Joss Whedon sci-fi show.
Yeah.
So this is about his life since then, going to all these sci-fi conventions. Okay, right. So I was supposed to play this one character who's in a bathroom stall next to him and everything. We have this great little scene where I'm trying to get his autograph under the bathroom stall. He says, hey, you know, because they didn't see my face in the scene.
Right.
It's just the voice. So he goes,
was it really your feet, or did they have like a
stand? My actual feet.
Okay.
Actual feet. So if you want to really see my shoes.
Did you really have your pants off, or they were?
Pants down, but I had like a second pair of underwear in the pants and an actual pair on.
Because you could have just had your pants on, and then they had a pair of pants.
Could have done that too. I'm just curious. You know, it was an independent project.
Yeah, I see.
So we're doing this, and he goes, listen, we have this other character we haven't cast yet that performs tomorrow. He goes, it's a person in line at one of these signing things, only he comes up to me at the end, and we have this little scene together where I write the line, and he says it along with me as he does. He goes, and of course, if you want to improvise some stuff, go ahead and improvise some stuff. He goes, but I need you to create a different character so they don't recognize your voice. So we started pitching around a few things, and I said, don't worry, by tomorrow I'll have some great choices in the morning. He goes, great. Go home, start working on some things. Now, what I thought was, what if he was from a tiny island, a Latin island, like Latin American small island.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something off Venezuela.
Right. Exactly. Like with thatched roofs and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and was very meek, but had an incredibly dark side. This was the idea. So I come in the next day and I go, well, you know, I could pitch him like Southern, I can make him like a stoner and all this. And I go, or I could make him this tiny little man with a tiny little voice. Okay? Can you do something very special for me? And he was like, ooh, I love that. So that's what he wound up being. And so we started improvising.
Wait, and they put that guy in an Easter Bunny outfit?
No, in the Tooth Fairy.
Tooth Fairy.
Which was actually my own outfit that I had from Halloween, because my girlfriend and I had gone as the Tooth Fairy and a tooth. She was the tooth.
And you were the Tooth Fairy.
I was the Tooth Fairy in this ridiculous outfit. So they were like, bring a costume if you got one. I got one. So I bring this Tooth Fairy outfit. They love it. I go on. I'm like, can you sign this for me? Right, and he signs the thing, and I'm like, gosh, do you it? And then I go, Giorgio, help me to forget what happened to my village.
That was what you wanted him to write in the thing.
I burned it down. And that was the dark moment of this strange little character that he burned down his village. And it wound up blowing up. Like, people love this bit. They brought ended up bringing the character back for second season. Like, and people, and it's in the video game now. Like, the fairy shows up. And it looks just like me. I'm wondering if I have a picture.
Did you get paid any more for making all that?
Actually, I actually did get paid more. Yes.
All right.
I did get paid more for all that stuff.
Yes. Than you had in second grade.
So, all that extra stuff, the video game character, everything, I got paid extra for all that
stuff. That's really good.
So it wound up taking on its own life, but it was a very small, totally different character from what I usually do.
Now, I don't know if you're old enough. Do you know a comedian in the 60s called Jose Jimenez? Familiar with him?
I don't think
Late
so.
Late 50s, 60s? I'm not sure where he
was
from.
And I know most comedians, so that's surprising.
I'm not sure where he was from, but he had this whole bit where he would get up, and there was not a lot of Latin, Mexican, and he would say, "Hello, my name's Jose Jimenez." And people would just crack up.
I think I do know
this. And he had a whole
this.
Thing about, oh, my name is... And so that was his whole deal.
I got to tell you, it rings a bell. I feel like I watched it like on Laugh-In as a child, maybe.
To play like this meek little Mexican guy.
Right.
And it could have been a fake accent for all I know.
It probably was.
But, you know, because
maybe
he
not.
Was the only guy, everyone thought that was a hilarious thing.
Yeah, no, it rings a bell. I seem to, like, in my childhood foggy memories, remember seeing something like that.
Jose Jimenez.
Yeah.
Check it out. How old were you when you first ran away from home?
I don't think I ever ran away from home.
Really?
Yeah. I should answer this correctly. 17. Because when I did run away from home, I never fucking went back. So the plan was always to, like, get a full scholarship to a college, go to that college, and never go home again.
Never go
home. And that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys still have a big family, a bunch of
people?
Yeah. They're all in Texas?
I have a brother in New York. I have two brothers in Dallas. I have a brother and two sisters in El Paso.
Okay.
So that's how that goes.
All right.
Yeah.
I think that all people have a kind of superpower. And by that, I mean something that just comes through them naturally, that they channel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what wants to come out in the world. Some people never know what their superpower is. You have a sense of what that is for you?
Sure, it's volume.
Volume.
I simply have the power to be louder. And it's not a power I really want all the time. You know, it's not appropriate most places. But I am just, I mean, I think it's something about the width of my rib cage and just the capacity.
Yeah.
And, of course, growing up and learning to exercise every day to be loud. Yeah. I think because people always, I walk into places and people are like, Jesus, just got a lot louder in here. Like, people show up at parties and they're like, well, we parked and we weren't sure which building, but then we heard Greg and we just walked towards that. So volume, sheer loudness, which, hey, listen, this is an age of quiet comedy. Loudness is not the best tool, but I can't help who I am.
Do you have an indoor voice?
This is my indoor
voice. This is your indoor voice.
It's as close as I get.
Okay, this is your indoor voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you a shower singer? Do you sing in the shower?
A little bit. I told a story on Comics Unleashed once. Where, and it was a true story, another comedian lived across, like, down the way, and I tend to sing along with whatever, I tend to not really pay attention to I'm thinking about other things, but the radio's on, and so at a certain point, I was singing that song, and I said, hey, what's going, okay, and then as soon as it's over, I hear, my comedy buddy yell from the other side, hey, Greg, just because you look like a lesbian doesn't mean you have to sing lesbian songs. And I was like, oh, God damn it. Busted.
Busted
singing. So, yeah, I love karaoke. A number of birthdays have been spent have been karaoke jams.
Right.
I love it because I feel like it's for bad singers. I feel like it's for the rest of us.
Now, every comic book character has this moment where they have to choose whether they're going to use their superpower for good or evil. Have you ever used your power for evil in any way? Or do you think it's good, or it's just a thing that's there?
I think it goes both ways.
It does,
I think I've used it a lot for evil, you know? but I've also used it a lot for good.
Was there some moment where you woke up to this choice that you could use this power for good or evil and you made a decision?
Yes.
Yeah, tell me about that.
I can tell you exactly what it was. I was, it was my brother Mark and I, and we were kids, you know, like, and So I must have been, you know, third, fourth grade. And we're outside of this little convenience store that was near our house where we would buy and occasionally steal candy from. And we see a girl, and she's about, she has to be at least 100 feet away. And she's a good ways away. She's on her bike, and she's just riding up the street.
Half a block.
At least. Yeah, a full block. Full block right. At least away.
Yeah.
And I start. Now, my brother Mark is my best audience. Anyone that knows our family knows my brother Mark.
Older, younger?
He's 18 months older.
All right.
And whatever, he just thinks it's hilarious. He dies laughing. So I go, look at this girl on this bike. Look at it. And I start just, you know, talking about this girl on this bike. Hey, hey, look at this girl on this bike. Look at that. And my brother Mark starts dying. Ah, the girl on the bike. I didn't know she could hear us at the distance she was at. But she starts, I'm going on and being so loud. She starts wobbling. Like, just without any provocation, just starts wobbling on her bike and crashes without hitting anything, without, there was no bump in nothing, just the sound of my voice and the things I was saying
disoriented
her so much she didn't, bam, just crashed. Then we felt terrible because I had no idea that I could do this. So we go running over to her to make sure she's okay. That's our intention, to help her pick up the bike. But she thinks we're attacking her. She thinks we're running at her, not to, and we're like, no, we want to help you. And she's very scared. We're like, we're just playing. We're trying to help her because we didn't want to get in any trouble. Our father, you know, would beat us. And so we're trying to help her. She was scared out of her mind. And that's when I realized, I was like, oh my God, this is some power.
Yeah.
You can really get in people's heads.
Yeah.
You know, and I can do it from a distance. You know, in New York, we were at one of the street, and I was with this one of my girlfriends, and a friend of hers was ahead of us, and we knew she was going to her place because that's where we were going to meet. So she was like, Greg, yell for her. I'm like, what? You yell for her. She's right there. She goes, Greg, if I do it, it's going to be like, hey. Hey, she's like, you got to do it. And of course, I gave out one. Hey! And, you know, right, you know, she turned right around. So it is something that I've been able, when I was in China, I went to China and couldn't find the main guy that was supposed to come pick me up. And I was like, well, he's got to be in this terminal somewhere. So I just went, yo, because I figured no one else is going to yell in English, yo, Simon.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just yelled out, yo, Simon, it's Greg, in the middle of the Shanghai airport. And I hear a guy on the second level go, hey, there you are. So it has worked to my advantage, but yeah. A lot of times it's I get a lot, and this, I don't even take it personally anymore. People are like, no. Greg, you have to be quiet. You have to calm down. I'm like, you're right. I know this is true.
I just can't do it.
I just have to be told because I'm not aware when, you know what I mean? It's just me being me. Yeah. And so I'm not, so I don't take it personally when someone, you know what I mean? I don't get butthurt about it.
Right.
I usually am like, no, I get it. I'm fine. I have to be told. It's cool.
See, now what's interesting, I mean, I grew up in Philadelphia, which is famous for people being kind of loud.
Very loud.
Obnoxious.
Yep.
New York City scene kind of thing. But when I come out here to L.A., people ask me, they say, oh, you're from the East Coast, aren't you? Because I'm a little loud, not compared to you, but
right.
Just a lot of people. I'm a little loud, I'm a little pushy, I'm a little obnoxious, and they say, yeah, this guy's kind of a fucking jerk. You know, he must not be from around here. But when I go home to Philadelphia, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, people say, oh, he's so quiet. He's so
right,
shy.
Right.
Is he retarded?
What are you, retarded?
Yeah, back there, I'm the quiet guy.
Yeah.
Here, I'm a loud, obnoxious
totally,
asshole.
Totally, exactly. Yeah. So, exactly. So,
all right.
And I'm loud and obnoxious there, so imagine what it's like out here. It's
nuclear. You're loud everywhere.
I'm nuclear. I,
well, that's fine.
Yeah, it is what it is.
That story is a great story, because when you're telling a story about the girl on the bicycle, mm-hmm. I am thinking about Peter Parker. You know, in Spider-Man, and when he gets his powers, and then, you know, he realizes, wow, I have, with this great power comes certain responsibilities. Because you have it now.
Yeah.
And the choice is thrust upon you, and you may not want that choice, but you have to. So that was your moment.
That was my moment when I realized there's a lot of power here.
All right, I have some other questions. You have a somewhat quirky sleeping ritual, bedtime ritual. What is it?
Mine is standard, smoke some weed, fall asleep on the couch, wake up, turn everything off, and go to sleep. That's pretty much it. Actually, usually my fiance hears me snoring on the couch. She gets up, wakes, turns everything off, and again, so it's a very standard California pass out situation.
Okay. And your fiance, is she quiet? Is she loud? I mean, how does she deal
with this? She is not loud. She is incredibly normal. It's one of those ones where you're like, how does she espouse herself to this madness?
Yeah, how did you get like, normal?
It's one of those things that it was such. Great opportunity. I had to take advantage of it.
No, I know why. I know why you're doing it. Why is she doing it?
That's she fine. She. We laugh. She is very funny.
That's good.
She's very funny, but in a very different way from me.
Yeah.
And so we just make each other laugh, and we laugh all the time. And we've been together 7+ years now.
That's great.
And that has not diminished at all.
That's great.
We still make each other laugh pretty much every single day.
All right.
So, and we don't fight. We very rarely fight. So those things together make for a very, we just have a very comfortable home.
That's great. Well, congratulations on that.
I feel very lucky.
Yeah, I had a guy here a couple of months ago who said he's an Italian from Long Island, and we were talking, he said, I never saw my parents fight. They got divorced, but they never fought. So that was a good thing. And then later we were talking, and he was saying how his parents were constantly yelling and screaming all the time. And I said, wait a minute. You're yelling and screaming. A while ago, you said that your parents never fought. He said, oh, no, that's just yelling and screaming.
Totally, that's just how you
that's
talk.
That's yelling and screaming. That's not fighting. That's
exactly.
They're Italians. They're from New York. Of course, there's yelling and screaming. But that.
I have a similar thing with when I teach my workshops. I tell the students, you know, I tell the comics.
Yeah,
I tell them, you know, in this instance. But I don't like to refer them to that way. But I tell the comics, speak to the audience as if they're one person. Because that gives it a that makes it more conversational for both of you. Right. And I go, and I know what you're thinking right now, but Greg, you yell and scream at the audience all the time. But that's how I talk to one person.
That's how you talk to
So, listen, the rule stands, trust me.
Now, say a little bit about the workshops that you do.
Oh, yeah. I'm very proud of these workshops.
Yeah.
I really am. I started teaching just because, you know, one of the comedy clubs noticed that I had been... You know, I've been correcting a lot of things with young comics. Hey, try this, do that. And they're like, you know, you got to put a workshop together. So anyways, so I didn't put this workshop together, and, it, you know, people loved it. You know, everyone that took it loved it, and that encouraged me to keep going.
Yeah, as and a stand-up workshop.
As a stand-up comedy workshops. And I really wanted it to only be one-night class. That was the idea. I'm going to tell you everything you need to know in one night. Okay? That was the concept. So I built this. It's a 4-hour lecture that covers everything. I mean, I get into it: the joke writing, the crowd work, the handling hecklers, the hosting, the business, the lifestyle, the politics, everything.
The underwear.
The underwear. Yeah.
Special,
well,
they got the special ones. Exactly.
Yeah. Have that. Well, you want to have that extra pair in case you do something on the road.
Sharding.
That you're going to have to cover up.
Sharding. Yeah.
So yeah. So it's just, but what I, so it was that one class. That's what it was designed to do, be one class. But then I would go see people that had taken my one class. They'd be making all these mistakes that I'd covered, and I realized it was too much information.
Well, it takes time. You got
to
process
to implement it, right, to implement it all at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I created, what I call the skills workshops, which are basically like lab classes, mm-hmm. where you take everything I told you there, and I make you do it, so that I know you know how to do it.
And where are these run out of? We can.
I do them at Busby's.
Okay.
Busby's East on Busby's Wilshire. East. They have a real nice showroom. I use the showroom
upstairs.
Yeah,
that's a great room.
Yeah. So I use that. That's where I'm teaching the workshops right now. And so so that's where I make you do it. I have a crowd work and riffing to make you do the crowd work and riffing and implement all the things that I told you. I have a storytelling workshop because it makes you bring the stories and we try and see if they have the factors we talked about in the other class. And then we try and punch them up and make them real material. You know, same with hosting. A lot of hosting seems easy, but we've seen so much bad hosting. Clearly, there's different, you know, you got to know how to be a good host if you want to make some money.
That's right.
You know? And so that's what those skills workshops were. And of course, handling hecklers. When I developed handling hecklers, this is the one workshop, and I'm not even joking, this isn't a sales pitch. I know I have a salesman's like way of being.
Look, I spend a lot of time in the marketing world. You believe in what you're talking about. That's why you're excited about it. That's why you're talking about it.
It is. And I get so... when it comes
don't
to handling...
Don't be shy about that.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate you giving me permission to be passionate about
this.
Because I am incredibly
passionate
about it.
You care, yeah.
The Handling Hecklers Workshop, I wish every single comedian that hasn't been doing it 5 years or more would take this workshop. Because it's designed... Because here's the thing. It's like any fight. Okay? You think you're ready for a fight? You ain't ready for a fight. Everything changes the second you get punched in the nose.
Yeah. The adrenaline starts.
Everything gets weird. Okay? So unless you have that experience and know what it feels like, you're not going to be ready. Okay? There's a reason that fighters actually hit each other in the gym. Okay? It ain't shadow boxing. Right. You're taking shots. So when that guy hits you, it ain't no big deal. That's what handling hecklers does. It gets you used to being hit out of nowhere and teaches you how to keep calm, recalibrate that situation, and just relaunch the attack. Yeah. Because one of the things that I hate the most is watching comedians lose to a heckler. It drives me crazy. And I've come, and I'm very good with crowd work and handling hecklers. I relish the opportunity.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
To handle a heckler.
Well, you can out-volume them.
I can out-volume like crazy. Yeah. And not just, but everybody can because they have the microphone. Right. And I teach them how to do that.
But that's not the skill.
But that isn't it. There are really five major defenses. And so you really figure out the ones that work best for you. You could use them in order or just use one. And so it's about understanding how to defend yourself in that moment.
So you can't tell us all five. Tell us one of the defenses against a heckler.
Well, one of the easiest and simplest is simply to ignore them.
All right, tell us another one, because everybody knows that one.
Well, not necessarily, because the natural impulse is to try and react to whatever they're saying, okay? Now, if you're not someone that's used to reacting to that, now, and saying just ignore them isn't as simple as it sounds, because if you choose to ignore them, it means they cannot, you can't change your rhythm, you can't change your tempo, you can't, because what it leads to if you try to ignore them unsuccessfully is you get rattled, and it's clear that they're affecting you anyway.
And that gives them more power.
Right, and that's the trick to actually ignoring them as a defense, is not letting it interrupt your rhythm and timing in any way whatsoever. And see? So while it seemed basic on the surface, there's actually technique to it to making that work.
So in the workshop, people are up on stage and you start heckling them.
Not me.
Other people, other classmates.
Uh-huh. Okay. And you don't know which one.
You don't know which ones.
You can't know which one.
Right.
Until it starts happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that sounds good. I think I would like that.
And I gave you that one because obviously that is the one that would be the most easiest
that's
to explain.
The easiest accessible one.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but the rest, obviously, you know, they get increasingly more complicated and they have to, you know. But notice, even to that simple one, there you have to understand the key is to truly ignore them.
Right.
And do your, and breathe and just stay in meter and keep smiling. And that means you're truly ignoring them. Now, pretending like, now refusing to respond to them is not the same as ignoring them.
Right. Because like I said, if they see that they are changing.
They're rattling your thing and you're stuttering a little bit. But you're not, you're not ignoring them. They're beating you. Yeah. They're beating you right now. You're just refusing to respond to it. Right. And there's a big difference. Because that's not a defense. That's getting beat up.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, that's different.
There is a difference.
All right. One other thing, you got some shows coming up. You said El Paso, Texas.
El Paso, Texas, the comic strip in El Paso, Texas. I'll be headlining there.
What's the date?
Well, that's September 28th through October 2nd, so that might be over by the time this thing airs.
Yeah, you might have missed that.
Yeah,
I
might
have
missed that.
Our friends listening in El Paso.
Yeah.
Well, we might have some. You're going to tell some people in El Paso to listen to the show.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But you travel around the country.
I usually travel and play Vegas a lot, and I go back up and play New York sometimes things like that. So I try to honestly only be on the road once a month because I like doing the workshops and I love doing the acting. And you can't be on the road that much and be a working actor.
Yeah. Do you have a home club here or a spot that you...
You know, to be honest, the place that I work the most, is the Ha Ha Cafe in North Hollywood.
Yeah.
I, of course, do shows at the Comedy Store. I do shows at the Improv. I do shows at the Laugh Factory. But the one show that I do the most... Is the Ha Ha Cafe, and that's the way it is.
Yeah, most comics kind of have a home.
One club that books you more than all the rest of them, you know.
You like them.
Unless you're a celebrity. The celebrity comics, they get to go wherever they want. But if you're not at the celebrity level, then, you know, you go where they book you the most, and that club does book me the most. And I love them for it. I love that club, and I feel very comfortable up there.
Well, you're on your way to celebrity status. Hottie, naughty.
Oh, yeah.
And the Greg Wilson. You feel like you have all the pieces.
All the pieces.
Yeah,
just needed to come together.
Here's another question. As a child, you had an imaginary friend.
No.
No?
I had brothers and sisters all over the place. There was no room for an imaginary friend. If I had an imaginary friend, he would get beaten up by my brothers.
Well, now that you're saying it, I also believe that for you, people, you need an audience.
Oh, yeah.
People, you needed an audience. Yeah. Even as a little kid.
Yes. Right away, I needed an audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't have imaginary friends.
I used to play on the playground at recess, and this might have been, this again, first, second grade, where I would play the monster, and I'd chase all the girls around. And I'd like, you know, and I'd make these grunting, growling noises, and I'd chase girls. They'd scream, and I'd loved it. I was chasing girls. They loved it, too. Yeah. They were being chased.
Yeah.
So, and that was, boy, that was pretty early out of the gate. Yeah. Same thing, actually, this is from kindergarten. In kindergarten, we had all these different PlayStations and a reading loft and all these things. But the PlayStation, there was a you know, you could play house. They had a little setup with the with the oven and the stuff like that. None of the boys ever wanted, all the girls wanted to play house, none of the boys wanted to play house. And I was like, I'll play house. They're like, you want to be the daddy? I'm like, I'll be the daddy. Like, I volunteered right away to go. I'm like, I don't know what's wrong with you dudes, but all the chicks are over here, man. So I'm going to go hang out with these chicks.
Well, so, that's kindergarten. It was kindergarten. Some guys are late bloomers.
They didn't quite get it yet. Yeah, I knew what I wanted.
I didn't get it till 10th grade.
There you go.
All right. Now, you don't know this about me, but I have this thing about pie, about getting hit in the face with a pie. And
it sounds very fetishy. That's got
a long story.
It's got a real fetish vibe to it.
I'm not. It's not sexual, and I'm not going to tell you the whole story.
I feel like it might be.
Here's my question for you.
I don't know. I don't know a lot of guys that fantasize about getting hit in the face with a pie. But okay.
Most of the time, when pies get thrown at other people, they're thrown with some aggressiveness or malice or something. You're going to tell someone it's okay to hit me in the face with a pie.
Right.
Just because it's going to
make
that.
Like in a charity event.
Because it makes them happy.
Okay.
Right? That's okay. You're going to give them permission. They're going to hit you in the face with a pie. You're going to receive this pie with generosity. Who do you want to throw this pie?
Oh, my fiance, Summer.
Your fiance? You want her to hit you in the face with a pie?
Sure.
Why her?
I trust her more than anybody on the planet.
Okay.
If anyone's going to not throw with malice, but try and hit me at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely try and hit me in the face.
No, she's...
But not hurt me.
She's going to succeed.
It's going to be Summer.
All right. Because my question was, you can pick anybody in history, famous people, living or dead.
Still going with Summer.
It's still
going
to be her.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep.
You guys have that kind of relationship.
We really do.
Okay. I understand.
So, a lot of love there.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of love
there. There is.
Yeah.
Like I said, I know she would try and hit me in the face.
Yeah.
But, you know, give it a good, accurate throw.
Sure.
But without malice. Completely without malice. Yes.
The story for me is that I, 20 years ago, sent a letter to my friends and family saying, I'm giving you permission to hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime and without warning. And really, the only reason I did it was because to make them happy. Because you don't have permission to do it. And now I sit here. Now it's open season. Do it anytime you want. And so in the past 20 years, I've been hit in the face with 50 pies, you know, multiple different times. And it really does make the other people happy, happy, happy. So, yeah, if you want to give a holiday gift that keeps on giving, tell your friends and family it's okay to hit you in the face with a pie.
Okay.
I mean, you know, you don't have to, but if you want to,
you know what?
You can do that.
I'm just going to tuck that away.
Yeah.
Little folder over here.
Suggestion. And
there it is.
Okay. One last thing I like to do on this show. We're going to get Summer to hit you in the face of the pie.
I think you got something about being in the face of the pie. You wrote your whole family letters. Hey, everybody. I would love to be at one of your family members' house going, look at this letter. I told you this kid was weird. I said he was weird when he was a kid. And if this doesn't confirm it, you always said he was right, Marcia. He's wrong. There's something wrong with this kid. First they spend Denzel wrong, right? Now look, he wants us to hit him in the face with a pie. A pie, Marcia. The kid ain't right.
You have it almost completely right, but the family's all Italian people.
Okay.
Indian people, and nobody's named Marcia.
Okay.
Aside from that.
Aside from the name.
Yeah, aside from the name.
It sounds 100% right.
No, they think I'm wrong. But I do have one uncle that he almost always makes it happen. Like last summer I was on the East Coast, I was at the beach, and I was talking to my cousin that I hadn't seen in years. He and I grew up together. And all of a sudden he says, you know, I got to tell you, I'm sorry. I don't know why I have to do this, but Henry said that I should do that, and he hits me with a pie. And, my uncle gave him a pie and said, hey, while you're talking to him, hit him in the face with this pie. So, you know.
Did you have an orgasm?
No. Honestly, I do it because it makes other people happy. But over time, I've discovered that when you're surprised with a pie, like, it's really tempting to get mad at that last moment or right after it happens. But there's this kind of meditation that, you know, I said it's okay. I told people they could do it anytime. So
you
I really can't get mad. Or my ex-wife, before she was my ex-wife, one time she was mad at me and we were going into a restaurant and she ran in ahead of time and ran out with a pie and hit me in the face with it. I didn't want to get hit with that pie, but, you know.
Anyway. Sometimes life hits you with a pie.
Sometimes. That's exactly right.
That's right.
Here's the last thing. I like to anagram on this show, which is to take the letters of something and rearrange it. So I've rearranged the letters for the Greg Wilson.
Okay.
And then if you want to read those, I'm not sure if any of them resonate with you or are amusing to you in any way.
Throws negligee.
You probably...
That sounds right.
You probably have done that.
It probably was right after torn negligee.
Some people throw shade, you throw negligee.
I throw negligee. Howl's greeting, also accurate.
Right?
At all times. Honest wiggler, that's true too.
Are you an honest wiggler?
I'm an honest wiggler.
We're going to have to ask your fiancé about that.
Yeah, she'll tell you. I actually do this thing called dick wiggling time. I just, you know, when you helicopter your dick around.
And I don't know. You say, you know, when you threw this, like,
come on, every guy helicopters his dick around, you know. And I'm like, dick wiggling time.
Now, you
dick wiggling time.
From personal experience, or you've done a little research, you've taken a poll. How do you know that every guy does the dick?
Well, because every guy has a dick, and at some point you had to have tried to helicopter it. I mean, you had to have tried, you know, unless you don't have a dick big enough to swing around. So I guess
honest wiggler.
Honest wiggler.
Honest wiggler.
Showering gelt? I think we missed one.
You didn't. You've never. Is this time for you to get showered by money?
Oh, is that what gelt is?
Gelt is a Jewish or Yiddish word for money. Like,
see, that just proved that I'm not actually Jewish.
What actually? You're not.
I'm Mexican. I'm not Jewish at all.
No.
People think I'm Jewish though, because I look and sound Jewish.
Have the New York thing.
Yeah. So showering gelt, I wish that were true. Let's get that to make that one real. Sweltering hog, unfortunately, sweltering hog, much truer
sweltering
than
hog.
Showering gelt. Seething growl, that happens.
Seething growl, yeah.
An erstwhile gong. A gong would be right. Erstwhile would be wrong.
Erstwhile, what does erstwhile mean exactly?
Isn't erstwhile like almost, you know, like, what's another way of saying, like...
It's not exactly honest, but... It's
no, it's like fanciful or you know, like, anyway, that's how I think of it. What does the actual definition say? Look it up.
Erstwhile.
Erstwhile.
See, we have the Google here.
I think it's something, you know what I mean? It's
erstwhile. It says former or past.
Oh, past.
Past. Both of us were.
No, then I was wrong.
Mary Anderson.
I was thinking fanciful.
Erstwhile the queen of America's stage. I didn't think it meant that.
Damn.
Ex or late, former, old, past, erstwhile girlfriend.
Well, I'm not an erstwhile gong just yet.
No, that one doesn't make any sense.
No.
Sweltering hog.
Yeah, that's pretty right on.
Yeah, that one could.
Okay,
and I like throws negligee.
Yeah, that's pretty real.
And I don't think I spelled it right. Honest wiggler, that was the funniest one.
Right. Dick wiggling time! Dick wiggling! You ever helicopter your dick around? Try to make it make shapes and shit?
I'm trying to remember. Now you make me feel ashamed. If I never have, I've gotten to this age. I mean, I'm going to do it this weekend.
You need to do it. It's fun.
Yeah.
Show
better with an audience.
Show them what you got, baby.
Better with an audience.
Oh, yeah. There's always an audience. I don't do it for me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I do it for my fiance.
Now, but when you say that you do it, it's hands-free, right?
Oh, hands-free.
You have to
know how to use your hips. There you go. Look at you. Yeah. Oh, you're ready.
Yeah, so it's hands-free.
And then you have someone throw a pie in your face.
Now you're just flirting. Well, I would like to thank my guest, stand-up comedian, Gonzo, etc., the Greg Wilson.
Yes.
For coming in this week. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug.
Ooh.
Email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. Dylan Vigil is our producer and engineer. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You've been listening to Actors Comedy Studio production of Comedy Death Star right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Greg, thanks again.
Hey, thank you very much.